Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
So, what does it mean to be a modern warrior? First off, the elephant in the room. Warrior isn't a dirty word. A warrior is mindful. They seek excellence and have learnt to control their aggression. It's about understanding leadership, developing individual resilience, and seeking consistent human optimization. Remember, lifting heavy isn't dangerous. Being weak is dangerous. Fortune favors the brave, and you're never given more than you can handle. This, then, is the Warrior U podcast. All call signs, ready. Let's roll!
Well, g'day team, how are you? Today on the Warrior U podcast, we'll be focusing on the art of thinking clearly. Joining us for this conversation will be Professor Ian Hickey, AM, an internationally renowned researcher in clinical psychiatry with a focus on mood disorders, depression and bipolar disorder. Professor Ian's work in promoting mental health, well-being and suicide prevention makes him an ideal guest for today's episode as we discuss the topic of thinking clearly and how to introduce that into our daily lives. Ian has worked as the inaugural commissioner on Australia's National Mental Health Commission, overseeing accountability for mental health reform. He has now begun focusing on integrating measurement-based care systems for young people and their families aimed at promoting early intervention and the use of technology to assist with suicide prevention. He was the founding director of Headspace, an excellent resource for youth in Australia and something my own children have called upon as well, as the CEO of Beyond Blue, one of Australia's premier organisations for assisting the 3 million Australians currently facing anxiety or depression. Professor Hickey received the Australian Honours Award of Member Order of Australia in the General Division for Services to Medicine in the development of key national mental health initiatives and general practice services in both the public and non-government sectors. Currently, Ian is the co-director of health and policy at the University of Sydney's Brain and Mind Centre. His research and advocacy for mental health reform and care give Ian an impeccable ability to speak on the challenges that humans face when thinking. His lifelong dedication to working with brain and mind means that he has developed valuable knowledge, helping people to work through different mental challenges so that they can think clearly, find productivity, and stay motivated. Professor Ian Hickey, I've listened to much of your work online, and you are clearly a cogent, erudite, and innovative mental health professional and academic. Thank you for joining me today to speak about this important topic. Where does this podcast find you today?
Sadly, in my office, where I'd rather be out on a most fabulous early winter's day in the sunshine, being active and being engaged, and worse than that, on my own in my office. You know, on the topic of thinking clearly, it's so much easier to think clearly on your own. But actually achieving things involves actually having other people
right.
Think clearly with you and coherently and cohesively. So one of those days for reflection on what I do, but hopefully followed by days of action to making those things real.
So you're in Australia, obviously.
Yes. Given the COVID situation, I am in Australia. I'm in Sydney, so I'm not with my friends in Melbourne where I would have otherwise been.
Right.
I'm not with my grandchildren in other parts of the world. I'm not with my relatives. I'm not where sometimes I must confess, in winter I retreat, Europe, Spain, Italy,
wow.
Places, South America.
Yep.
South America, and I said my close friends and other colleagues in South America who are doing it really tough at the moment.
Yeah.
Not elsewhere in the world. So we enjoy, or I enjoy in particular, safety and a very high standard of living here on the beautiful lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation here in Sydney.
There you go. That's a great introduction. Hey, this podcast is, you know, really going to talk about the art of thinking clearly. And, you know, you've spent a career, an entire career, thinking about mental health and suicide awareness and the brain. So I'm interested to see what your, I guess, description of the art of thinking clearly might be.
Yeah, so the world I'm in is filled with complex problems. And I must say, most people throw up their hands immediately. Oh, it's too complex. Oh, it's too big. It's too difficult. You know, in fact, many times in my life, I was reminding my mom yesterday, people go, not in your lifetime, Ian. It's too hard. It's too complex. It's not going to happen. Things aren't going to change. And many things about our mental life and certainly about brain function, we kind of go, oh, like really? We barely understand how brains work. In fact, it'd be fair to say we don't. As President Obama noted, we had far more distance to travel inside our own heads than we had in outer space to understand what was really going on. And that's a journey that in a scientific sense, we barely commenced. And the trouble with that is people go, oh, okay, therefore inaction follows.
Yeah.
Therefore, until we know everything, in fact, one of my current pet hates in the health system as to why it doesn't change is we can't change anything until we know everything.
Yep.
And we'll take no risk and we'll take no action because we're better off knowing the problems that we have and simply living with them, you know, just leaving as is. I was reminded this morning, actually, I had to go and re-find a session I'd had with the Dalai Lama of all people last year in November.
Wow.
And people had got him on the line thinking, oh, guy, well, he's a guy who'll tolerate anything. You know, like you just go and you meditate and think that's okay.
Yeah.
On the contrary, we spent an hour talking about social action. You know, yes, one does need to keep one's own head under control. One needs not to be overwhelmed. One needs to remain in a state. But one then needs to act, actually, with both short and longer term purpose.
Right.
So I think this issue of thinking clearly is really interesting. Like, what are the long-term goals that we're trying to achieve? And then what are the tractable steps along the way to those goals? And who do we need to make those steps with to get to those goals? And this isn't just politics. It's not popularism. It's not how many people can I get on my team to go in that direction.
Right.
Popularism. I have a joke with my kids. By the time everyone votes for what I'm in favor of, you know, it's 10 years after we should have done it, right?
Yeah.
That popularism in one sense or the popular acceptance of things often follows long after others of influence or capability have gone down that path to create the opportunity. Now, mental health awareness, a focus on mental health around the world at the moment, the use of technology in a lot of the areas I'm associated with, they're all areas that people go, oh, too hard. Oh, too difficult. Need to do many, many, many more things. Don't understand enough to start to take reasonable actions.
Is that procrastination? You know? Is that one of the effects of not thinking clearly?
That's a nice... yes. Procrastination, absolutely. Can't do anything because something might go wrong. Can't do anything until I know all the facts. I mentioned the COVID era, knowing all the facts.
Yeah, of course.
I saw on TV last night, Anthony Fauci, probably one of the most famous scientists in the world at the moment.
Indeed.
Being asked would he like to revise his opinions of February 2020. He said, well, yes, if I knew what I know now, I would probably have said different things in February 2020, but don't be ridiculous. What I said in February 2020 related to what I understood at that time to take actions at that time in an appropriate way. So you can always say, and I'm from the research world, and I get sent things every day. Oh, I don't know whether this one proves it or not. We better do 10 more. We better see. And as a consequence, we either procrastinate, or I would say slightly in a more nasty way, Trent, we avoid. We avoid.
Is that a fear? Is that fear? Yeah, you just answered my question before I answered it.
Fear is. I mean, being afraid, okay, is okay. I don't mind people being cautious, but again, fear itself is no actual reason. And in fact, fear is very dangerous if it leads to inaction. If you fail to respond to the threat in the environment, or you never do. You know, a life never lived is one lived in fear. You know, you never actually do anything. You never experience the mastery, but more importantly, the change. I mean, there's great personal satisfaction in doing things, and you've missed it. I've been very lucky in my life to be associated with things that have actually, where Australia in particular, has done things in Beyond Blue, in Headspace, in technology, in mental health and other changes. I must say Australia's done things in HIV and in alcohol, and we've done things during the COVID era. And, you know, we sometimes when we get organised and we don't get lost in silliness, we go, okay, we don't know everything, but we know enough to take sensible actions. But there is a leadership element to that. And your key point here, there's a thinking clearly. Okay, what are the best set of options now that are reasonable and are good steps along the way to a longer term purpose?
Right. Okay. So if short, medium and longer term purpose is what helps us to think clearly, what prevents us from thinking clearly other than not having a short, medium and long-term purpose?
Well, you've named two, procrastination and fear, okay. I think are – so avoidance, you know, and in a personal sense, I mean, in my world, I'm always struck with fear of criticism. You know, there's particular types of fears. There's fears that you might, you know, in the health world, do harm to others. You might make the situation worse.
Right.
But then you somehow have to live with, oh, my God, look how the situation currently is. You know, how much actually
imposter
are you prepared
episodes
to tolerate? Yeah, yeah. How much are you prepared to tolerate the current situation? Interestingly, one I think in leadership positions, et cetera, is fear of criticism. You know, people will, not everyone will be happy about this, you know.
Mm.
And if what you're seeking is popular award and to be cheered as you arrive, and you arrive with an unpleasant and somewhat difficult message, you know.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be hard. This is going to be difficult. Not everyone's going to agree. There are, in many, most processes of serious change, there are winners and losers. You know, some people are going to not like it because they have vested interests in the way things are in various ways.
Mm.
You know, so how you deal with that. So I think one of the issues that happens, and I think increasingly in our world, leadership has given away to popularism. Better to be popular, Instagram liked, an influencer, than actually a decision maker or somebody who goes, no, actually, you know what? You know, there are harder things to be done, but they will deliver greater benefit. You know, there are really good reasons to act. And I think in the thinking clearly, one has to clearly articulate what they are, not be naive about it.
Yeah.
You know, what is actually going to result? So if you're running a campaign for anything, what are the reasonable doubts, reasonable fears, reasonable critiques that people have? What are the unreasonable ones? And here's the hard bit. Sometimes you have to say some of those are unreasonable. You know, sometimes you have to call out the unreasonable ones. Often that will lead, I mean, particularly in the current social media world and Twitter world, you know, it might unleash upon you degrees of unpleasantness. You know,
yeah. Yeah, we're seeing that all around now.
Easy.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that has made many of our political leaders and many of our social leaders actually less willing to lead. You know, actually an interesting kind of, well, we'll see where the public wants to go. And then if enough of them for long enough actually want to do something, you know, then we'll act.
So that's a very interesting statement that you've made there. And it's interesting that we're sort of going down this path. But there's lots of discussion going around about, you know, the primacy of the medical health professionals around this COVID story, this narrative at the moment, and whether, you know, the politicians should be leading more or taking all of the advice and acting on all of the advice from the medical health professionals. And there'll be many listeners out there saying, well, you know, the politicians aren't necessarily leading, they're taking all the medical advice and acting on that, because of course all the medical advisors are not in total agreement, even around this, our own country,
right,
let alone the world. Right,
exactly true. And you just hit the nail on the head of something. You know, in eras of uncertainty, in COVID, what a great example. There is no yes answer. There is no health advice. I mean, that itself is an illusion.
Right.
And that's a lack of transparency in a particular thing. In fact, what health professionals know any particular day, you've only got to live in Australia for the last year and found that each state health officer, you know, actually does not result. We do not have the same responses in New South Wales versus Victoria. We've
had
different responses in Western Australia and Queensland. Right. So clearly there are different options available. Health advice, It's a very interesting differentiation, mate. The health advice is actually is a pool of information which has options associated with it.
Right.
And it can present to government from a health perspective what are those series of options that are available to it. And right around the world, just to go further, right around the world at the moment in different situations, different governments all saying they're acting on health advice. Or if you follow the issues in the UK in recent times, and including people from the Prime Minister's office there who've now left there and said, actually, the health advice was X and the Prime Minister did Y, you know, but and people said they were acting on health advice, et cetera. You can see the differentiation between advice and I would say the critical point you're making about decision-making and leadership. And clearly, the social implications of COVID are an excellent example. Health advice is one thing. Economic advice is another. Social is another. Political judgments to be made. There are value judgments to be made. Just take the UK example. Clearly, there was a belief early in the UK that the lives of older people were of less value than the economic and social benefits to younger people. You know, and that actually, if the virus mainly killed older people at the ends of their lives, then there would be a higher social tolerance for that. That was a value judgment.
Yeah,
that
indeed.
Was not health advice. Health advice never went anywhere near that. From a simple health point of view, all lives are valuable. From an economist point of view, not so, you know, et cetera. So,
for sure.
You know, I think it's a very good example of when you move from advisory to decision-making, or and I would say in situations like the ones I'm in, where I'm giving technical advice all the time, being honest about the range of options and being honest about the uncertainty, right? The uncertainty of the situation.
So the assumptions that we make, being clear about what we know and what we don't know is what you're saying, yeah?
Yeah, and being transparent and open about that. And I think the one of the things that happened again in the modern media age is pretend uncertainty doesn't exist. Huge uncertainty exists. The COVID was a fabulous example, like how the thing spread. Is it more lethal than the flu? You know, what is the really nature of the thing? You know, huge uncertainties. Now, the scientific process in the background and others is trying to resolve as many of those things in real time, but it's responding to data in real time. Now we have variants, you know, and they're like all are some more infectious than others or not. You know, people are giving advice. So I think sometimes in the public domain in particular, lacks of transparency. I go back to the leadership question and thinking clearly. You know, thinking clearly in the world I'm in actually means conceding uncertainty. Okay.
Right. Conceding uncertainty.
And therefore, why? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, when you say there's a clear way forward, the rationale behind that and the uncertainties that sit around that. Okay. And a willingness to be going, this is my research world. Well, that was a great idea. But in practice, it didn't really work out. And did we learn from that? Did we learn to correct quickly enough the assumptions that we had made to set a better course towards where our medium-term or longer-term destinations really are? So a capacity to be self-critical. You sometimes, again, in the leadership world, you know, but you said that we would get X, you know, and we would arrive there by this time frame, you know, right or wrong. As distinct from, well, that's the intention, you know, but the process of arriving there will revolve reflection and consideration and a willingness to continuously challenge my own assumptions about that. So thinking clearly is also got to do with being open to taking on critique or, more importantly, evidence as it emerges. Now, evidence, again, is not yes or no. It's a collection of best things. So, you know, what we would talk about as being evidence-informed, right? The health advice is complex advice, distilled best it can be, on balance.
Yeah.
And when the risks associated with it. Now, of course, in real life, we're doing that all the time, you know.
Yeah.
If you say, as I back out of my garage this morning, can you guarantee that I'll arrive at work without crashing my car? You know?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No, indeed.
So I think leaders are often asked to make unrealistic statements as distinct from realistic statements. Clear thinking and clear messaging about where we really are. And I say this in terms of the collective issue of working with people, which is a matter of trust. If you want to arrive and do really important things, there are serious issues of trust involved.
Yeah.
I mean, just going back to the warrior concept, and I'm glad you clarified what exactly that is. But, you know, when people's lives are on the line historically in armed forces and whatever, the issues of trust in particular, willing to take actions on the belief that the best possible options have been explored is central.
And I think that's true of all sectors as well, not just in the military. It's true of all forms of leadership as well.
Yeah. So in the health sector, you're going into a hospital, right, for operation, or you've just been run over in the road and taken by ambulance to a hospital. You are placing enormous trust
indeed
in that system, you know.
Yeah.
And you become – now, so the leadership and accountability in those systems has to respect that trust, you know, and I think provide an honest and straightforward, informed, you know, in a particular way. Now, it's interesting that what prevents that. I mean, sometimes I think people say, okay, I'm going to be so open, I'll confuse the hell out of you, right? So God knows what
Too much information. Communicating everything all the time is sometimes not as effective as, you know, select information at the right time.
Well, I would go further and say it's not honest information, right? So what in the medico-legal world around health, you should tell people all of the possible complications of all of the possible things, right?
Mm, mm.
And at that point, most people would never do anything without accurately communicating, okay, if we do nothing, what's likely to happen to you? If we do this much, what are the possibilities?
Yep.
If we go so far, what are the rare? I mean, you see this around vaccination at the moment.
Sure.
What are the extremely rare complications but are true? But what are the implications for you, but not just for you, but for those people you care about, for the whole community, if you don't? You know, so putting individual action, vaccination is an excellent example, within a wider social context.
It's like every second conversation in the public right now.
Yes. Mm. So the issues around vaccination, not just ones of individual risk and that being accurately communicated and best information being continuously updated about that, and then that being communicated well.
Yeah.
Certain things as the situation actually changes. So it's kind of interesting because I think, and I think in the political domain, but also I think in the health domain has been really interesting. And if you go back in Australia, look at the history of HIV or issues of dealing with the heroin epidemics, you think Australia's been lucky, I think, in the health domain in many key public health areas to have had very strong health leadership. And when those people speak, they tend to be trusted by the community, but I think they tend to speak very
in
honestly.
The most part,
they don't very in most situations. Mm. Yes.
Mm. Okay. So for the average leader amongst us, or just for the average listener, listening in around the world right now, how do we focus on thinking more clearly? Obviously, setting those short, medium, and long term goals. But what specifically would you recommend for us to think more clearly?
So on the issue you're trying to deal with is actually being prepared to be engaged with the information.
Right.
And with the people who provide that information, right?
So listen.
What annoys me is people who want complex things explained in 30 seconds and then the answer is X.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Right.
And then I'm going to go and lead these people into that particular thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And I often go, now, hang on a second. If you're going to take on some serious thing here at the moment, you've got to engage with the complexity of it further, right?
Yep.
Because it ain't going to be leading them just over the next hill or leading them for the next 10 minutes.
Mm.
You know, most things are going to take a longer term of thing, and we may need to change course or tackle, you know, in various ways along the way.
Yeah.
And you don't want people to lose that trust along the way very quickly, you know, because they want people to continue to work with the process of serious change. you know, let's face it, the leadership clear thing is about change. It's not about business as usual.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's about change.
Yeah.
It's about challenges, right? And challenges into uncertainty. You know, we're headed into uncertain territory, but there's a good reason we're going there.
Yep.
We may have to adapt what we do along the way, but we're not going to fall apart along the way, right?
Yeah.
You know, and having groups of people who can then stick together to deliver that change with uncertainty, perhaps with disappointment, perhaps with unforeseen factors along the way becomes critical. That requires a willingness, I think, to become familiar with the territory, right? You know,
right, getting across, well, just, getting across just, the detail.
Yeah, well, enough of the detail to understand the uncertainty.
Got it.
If you like, and the reasonable fears from the unreasonable, just, you know, obstruction. You know, to be able to therefore to use the fight the battles you need to fight, but also to cop the criticism that you might need to cop along the way, the things that you might need to take on board. And there's a flexibility. So there's a cognitive flexibility that goes with clear thinking, you know, which is the incorporation of information at sufficient depth. But there's also a willingness to accept conflicting information or criticism that's legitimate and try to see how that might come together. You know, so it's a continuous signal to noise, actual kind of operation.
Yeah, right.
So that you have a greater capacity to think. I'll tell you some other things I really hate. So I was there on the political process this week. Well, we've consulted with everybody. I go, good. And that created a huge amount of noise. And so the way forward is what? Well,
confusion.
All of that noise is a little bit of everything to make it less noisy.
Yeah.
I go, as far as I'm concerned, that is the abrogation of the responsibility of leadership. All those people have been consulted with, a leading organization or a decision maker, in order to inform that decision, but in and of itself. So I think there are other, when you're going to say other, we talk about fear, we talk about other things, procrastination, there's other ways, the pretense of consultation, right?
Yeah, that's interesting.
If you want to do nothing, keep consulting, I'm consulting more. You know, you just create more and more noise, which becomes more and more reason why we can't. In the world I'm in, the usual reasons lined up as to why we can't do something is these six organizations or those 10 things are against it. And in order to include all those organizations, we can't take that action.
Yeah.
That's called business as usual. Yeah.
And a leader's job is to make decisions and care for their people. And you can't keep everybody happy. If you try to do that, you're going to keep nobody happy.
I think in all the great parables and stories about the downfalls of keeping everybody happy, can I make my earlier comment, if you want to be popular all the time, don't put yourself in a leadership job. You know, popularity, you know, I always laugh when I see popularities of prime ministers and popularities of others. In some ways, they often do a better job when they're unpopular.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the big decisions that have been made by political leaders over time that have really mattered, often they've been very unpopular at the time they've made it because they're very confronting. It's actually interesting because you often see leaders who are respected, right? Not necessarily liked, but they're respected for their capacity to make decisions, and because people actually see the values behind it.
Yeah.
So another aspect of that, they see the values-driven aspect of that. They may not agree with it, but actually they can see where it's coming from.
Mm.
And therefore, they can choose to go with that or not in particular ways. You know, and you may disagree. I mean, you may actually disagree. I mean, in fact, there are definitely things I disagree with, but I actually find genuine leaders of things that much easier to deal with because I can much more clearly articulate with those people why I disagree.
Yeah.
You know, and they may be operating to a different value system and I can see that's why it's different, or they have chosen to prioritize different kinds of information in the particular things and I can respect that is a reasonable alternative. You know, so I don't agree, but I can respect and I can actually, actually respond to that, you know, in particular ways. So I think it's really interesting where leadership becomes a popularity vote. As my kids say all the time, Dad, the chance of you being elected to anything is nil. But on the other hand, people coming and asking you to lead something is quite common.
Yeah, indeed. Bram and I often talk about, I'm of the belief that you know, leadership is not a popularity contest. And Bram will say that leadership is about winning a fan base, which I think is more in line with respect, because, you know, gaining that respect for a leader is where you gain the fans. You don't have to like them, but you can respect a leader, right?
Trust base. I mean, base is interesting. I don't want fans. I want the key. I want the people who are capable, myself to trust them and them to trust me, that we're on the journey together.
Yeah.
Whether we like each other or not, I don't want them to be a fan. This ain't a popularity or narcissistic contest for me, right? So fan base. I mean, I'm thinking about another great footy coach is not a bad analogy for these kind of things. Mm-hmm. You know? I don't know if you've ever spoken to Wayne Bennett and his fabulous coaching career.
We've spoken to
fan
a few coaches.
Fan base ain't the thing, but trust and belief.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, trust and belief. People work with him. Others. Lee Matthews. Coaches have been fabulously successful, are not always popular.
Yeah.
But boy, are they trusted by the leadership groups and others who've got capability to take those actions. And they then have coherence of actions. They don't have warring parties within their group. They've got coherence of actions, but they also have delegated authority. They have mutual trust between. Now, everything I've been associated with, as my kids point out, you haven't achieved very much, Dad. But the few things that I have achieved, you know.
They just need to Google you.
Well, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you never fool your kids, you know.
You're just Dad.
Yeah, exactly. But the key bits of achievement have been where capable people have trusted each other to take a collective action in particular areas. And that's an interesting thing as well about working with people to some degree you don't like or disagree with, or I don't have a strong personal relationship with, but I do trust them. Mm. I know where they're coming from. They've got a capability. For most social action that I'm involved in, bigger plot things, they're not single person. They're not all rally behind a single leader, but they are leaders who can form groups of capable people to take collective action. And the issue is, have you got the right capability set? Have you got the right group? You know, I don't want groupies. I want people who've got the right capabilities to form functional groups.
Yeah, right.
And then contribute to that out of trust and out of shared values or a shared goal for a particular thing. You know, and that, you know, interesting, the COVID thing, quite hopeful at the start of it, that when our Prime Minister talked about forming a national cabinet, because really it's a national crisis. We haven't really had a national crisis like it since the Second World War. Mm. We do expect politics of the day to be put aside for collective action. You know, in our situation, the Commonwealth has certain capabilities, the states have certain capabilities, where we need those capabilities to act in concert.
Yeah.
We don't need to be fighting every day. Wasn't my fault, it was your fault. It doesn't help anybody.
You know,
and that's a good example. I think there are examples. But in organisations, smaller organisations, we often have, of course, we have different responsibilities. We have different capabilities. I've got to work with people all the time who have a completely different skill set to me. Mm. I'm not very good with money and numbers and accounting. I'm not very good with contracting. I'm not very good with certain other technical, other kind of things, different technical
skills. Pretty good with the brain, though.
That's the easy bit. Just talk about technology. I don't know what's under the boot of a car. You know, someone hands me, I'm trying to run technology companies and things at the moment. Yep. I am deeply trusting. But I've got to make sure I got the right people. We've got to agree what's going on.
Yep.
You know, otherwise we go around in circles. So I think some kinds of leadership, this is not what necessarily is meant, but the fan-based leadership where people are afraid to tell you what you need to know. So I've got to say a leadership thing I must say over time. I've generally tried to recruit people who I know are going to disagree with me, right?
Yep.
I know they come through experience or background or diversity or somewhere else. I know it's highly likely that they don't share my view or my background. Therefore, they're likely to have a different take on the problem.
Yeah, I think you can still, you know, still respect a leader and disagree with them. And in fact, you know, that is that's required in order to think clearly, right, to get all that information. What about those people that are just struggling to get clarity? You know, when we're talking about thinking clearly, what we're really talking about, really, really at the heart of the problem, is getting clarity. And some people just get overwhelmed with the information that's coming at them and don't have that, maybe don't have that, you know, that capacity to do that. Are there sorts of therapies like CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, that helps you reframe?
Totally. This is where the movement to cognitive therapies has been really helpful.
Right. But
usually,
tell us about that.
Is because you see the whole thing.
Mm.
Climate change, disaster, nothing to be done.
Yeah. Right.
World's going to end, icebergs are going to melt, sea levels are going to rise, we're all going to die. You know, and I can't do anything. There's no action to be taken.
Right.
The problem is so big, it's in the future, it's so global, and you can't see any way forward. You know, actually reducing the problem to series of tractable steps, short, medium, long term.
Right.
What's the role of the individual? What's the role of groups? What are the actions to be taken? Now, in people's individual lives, they do the same thing. They catastrophize, they overgeneralize, they point to the future, they get overwhelmed. They make the problem too big.
Yep.
You know, and the steps to getting there are overwhelming, not possible.
Like writing a PhD and leaving it to the last moment.
For example.
Yeah,
the classic one, of course, is people say, you know, they're standing at the bottom of a 300-foot cliff. I can't get from the bottom to the top by going straight up that cliff.
Yeah,
you go,
indeed.
No, you can't.
No.
But you can walk around the other side and walk up the hill to the back. You know, you've got to break the thing down to, yes, that's the goal, but how do I get there? What are the steps over what time frame? And what are the sets of people, actions, capabilities do I need to have in place to achieve that goal? And what is realistic about that? You know, what is it that each of us in our own lives can do in particular ways, you know, over time? And so breaking those things down and breaking them right down to even what am I doing today that is relevant to the particular issue, and then what might I do over the next week or over the next month to particular things. So when people create entirely unrealistic time frames, scope, scale, they give up. You know, they're overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And I think that is entirely a lack of clear thinking. Like, all that information is true, but it's actually not relevant to action. You know, so the other bit of cognitive therapy, interesting, you raise it, Trent. It used to be called cognitive behavioral therapy. It was, what did you need to think to take the action, the behavior?
Right.
Today? You know,
right. So it's not called CBT. It's not called CBT anymore.
Well, a lot of it is presented as cognitive therapy.
Right.
But when I was young, the B bit always mattered. The cognition bit only mattered to what you did next.
Right.
Because the interesting thing happens, I'll tell you why, it's an iterative loop. When you do different, you think different, right?
Okay.
Actually, it isn't always this funny thing. Humans have this idea that they think and then they act. Actually, there's as much evidence that we act and then we think about it afterwards, actually. Why did I do that?
Yeah, we reflect on it, if we do reflect at all.
Yeah, or we make up a reason why we did it, which probably wasn't the reason we did it anyway.
Well,
we're great at post hoc explanations.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of study around actually knowing that you're going to make a decision or do something that you know is incorrect, but you go ahead and do it anyway, right?
Right, and a lot of what you predict turns out not to be true.
Right? Exactly, because we worry about things that are in the past or in the future, not what's happening now.
Yeah. Yeah, and you may be completely wrong in your set of assumptions.
Sure.
Right? You know, I'm not going to contact these three people because they're not going to help me. Did you ring them? No. Did you actually ask them? No.
Mm-hmm.
Ring them.
Yeah.
Oh, I rang those three people. Guess what? One of them, in fact, the one I never thought would help, wants to help.
Yeah.
He or she has their own reason. Oh, really? You know,
Yeah.
Oh, you know, so actually the challenging of thoughts through action, and in fact, the discovery of opportunity through action changes the way that you think about it. In fact, the only way of challenging dysfunctional thinking is to go out and test it in the real world.
Right.
And find that it's wrong and the assumptions that you make are wrong. Now, we do this all the time. We assume certain groups aren't going to work with us. We assume people aren't going to do X. We assume it's not possible to do Y.
Which makes the problem
form a leadership group
less clear, doesn't it? Because we're making that assumption that it's all much more difficult than it probably would be in reality.
Yeah, and you also then miss opportunity. I think that what in the leadership positions I've been in along the way, it's not that we were necessarily right in the beginning. The direction was right. How we got there and who joined in along the way turned out to be fascinating.
Yeah.
And some of the things that have been successful, I won't tell you so much about the ones that were unsuccessful, but the ones that have been successful, it's usually been because unexpected allies, unexpected groups, unexpected things. So you can't have the clear thinking thing is also you can't have planned out in intimate detail all the things that will happen because you don't know. Mm-hmm. Funny thing about predicting the future, you have to wait till the future arrives. You can't, you know, people want to say, but I want to know. Well, you actually don't know because there will be things, contingencies, other things. What you need to have is a clear direction about the what the future can be or what you're seeking to achieve, you know, the sort of things that you're aiming at without specifying all of the specifics along the way. And the leadership bit in it, so the clear thinking is being clear about the goal, clear about then the strategy, clear about the initial tractable processes and our willingness, a willingness to build the partnerships, the teams, the capabilities to achieve that along the way.
Yeah,
an openness to being influenced by that.
Yeah, in the Defence Forces, we often talk about selection and maintenance of the aim. So, you know, having that goal to head towards and then maintaining that along the way as we go through, you know, whatever particular mission it is.
Yeah, so leadership, one of the things about that clear thinking is got to the, what you said, the maintenance, it's the purposefulness of it, okay? Yeah. Mm. What is the overarching purpose here, right?
Yeah, the
now,
why.
Or the particular elements or the decisions each day. Yeah, the why. The why's got to be clear. Yeah. You know, nobody's on board for without some clear articulation of the why. And then the strategy. Then the strategy. Okay, in order to do that, we're heading north. Okay. You know, this is on based of all available evidence, the best way to get there is to go north.
Yeah.
Now whether we have to tack slightly east first and then go a bit further west further, but we're going north, you know. We're gonna have to be open to the contingencies that arise and be influenced by that. But we're not suddenly unclear. I mean, Defence Force is probably the best example of this. You know, you can only really expect people to put their life on the line and act in a particular way if the why is clear and there's trust and the purposefulness of the activity is clear.
Yeah.
In particular,
it gets harder otherwise, that's for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, in any serious organization involved physical threat or any other particular thing, it's not unreasonable, you know, the purpose and the value to yourself and to others, to those you care about. So purposeful activity is important. You know, if you're trying to lead people to do questionable things, to do, or worse, I think in our modern world, purposeless things, you know.
Right.
I was struck, there's a German word which I can't repeat. But it's got to do with basically couch sitters, people who just sit on couches. And they're often in leadership positions, right? But
absolutely.
But they're not. They're just there to prevent activity.
Right.
You know, as well. And
that's interesting. That's a really interesting concept.
Yeah. Mm. And a lot of public sector organizations and whatever they're occupiers of the position.
Yep.
But they're not. And they're it's incredibly demoralizing and frustrating. And you see this not just in public sector, but in larger organizations, et cetera. So there's an interesting thing here about the units of organization and the identification of whether people at various levels of those things are actually engaged in leadership.
Yeah.
Are they engaged in clear
or are they managing, thinking? Leading or managing?
Or are they keeping the seat warm, you know, and deriving personal? Now, that's actually really, really interesting because I think for those of us who are interested in change in these organizations, there's a need to deal with that. Okay.
Yep.
We need to engage those people at all levels of organizations who are in jobs, not to keep the couch warm, but actually at the level at which they are capable or to join in particular things, you know. But the inertia that we see in many of the areas or the frustration of many people who attempt things is to, you know, I actually say, look, the problem isn't with the people who disagree with us. Okay.
Yep.
That's easy.
Yep.
That is easy and recognizable. And if they're straightforward, it's a contest of ideas or a contest of values, whatever it is. The hard one is the passive resistance.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm here to help.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Helping. Yep.
And they can be in leadership positions.
Not helping. Yeah. And many occupy senior positions in organizations.
Yep.
You know, or occupy levels of critical leadership. And I think one of the problems is for critical thinking is to identify who needs to be within organizations relevant to take actions.
Mm. Yeah, that's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. Look, Ian, I think there's been so much that you've given us over the last 45 minutes or so. And the big takeaway for me is that sort of small, medium, long-term goals and clarity around information. I think that's really useful for myself and everybody that's listening. And I really did want to say thank you to you for giving up your very valuable time. I know how busy you are and all of the work that that you do behind the scenes in understanding this and many other aspects around mental health and the brain and thinking. So thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks, Ian.
Thanks very much for listening, gang. Our pre-recording producers are the amazing team at Talent and Truth. Special thanks to Sabine and Samantha. Caitlin Swallow as our post-production editor. Thanks to Jess Bunker for research. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. There's a weekly blog on the Warrior U website and a fortnightly newsletter that you can sign up to at hindsightleadership.com. That's all one word. Thank you for listening to the Warrior U podcast presented by Hindsight Leadership and Resilience.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.